This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed. We'll begin this show with the adventures of Philip Marlowe. We'll hear his story from October 8, 1949, titled The Open Window. After that, it's the adventures of Michael Shane and the case of the man who couldn't die. That story aired December 12, 1951.
Get this and get it straight. Crime is a sucker's road, and those who travel it wind up in the gutter of the prison of the grave. This started with a terrified woman lost in a maze of memories she couldn't explain. And waiting for her outside an open window was death.
From the pen of Raymond Chandler, outstanding author of crime fiction, comes his most famous character in The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. Now with our star, Gerald Moore, starred as Philip Marlowe, we bring you tonight's exciting story, The Open Window.
California's a year-round kind of place, where each day blends into the next with a sort of sunny indifference. But the one just passed had been a little special. It was the cool, crisp autumn weather that reminded you of the East, where autumn meant kicking your way through knee-deep drifts of brown and yellow leaves, along a rutted country road that hinted of adventure at every turn. Yeah, that's the kind of a day it had been. But now, at a little past eight, as I stood at the window of my third-floor apartment, and stared out over an up-improved Los Angeles real estate to house maybe 500,000 people that tonight I wanted no part of, because the world was out there minding everybody else's business, while I was in here minding my own. In here, everything was in order and cozy. I could read if I want to, write a letter if I want to, or just relax with... Oh, no.
Your name's Philip Marlowe?
Yeah, why?
Because I had that name and this address written here on this card. I think I was supposed to see you. Do you know me?
Well, no, frankly, I don't. What were you supposed to see me about?
Who are you, Mr. Marlowe? I mean, what sort of business?
I'm a private detective.
Private detective?
Wait a minute. It's not that bad a racket. Oh, now, look. Why don't you come in and we'll talk this over, huh? Come on.
All right. Thank you.
There. Sit down, won't you? You look like you can use a drink. Do you want one?
No, thank you. I just need to rest a moment.
Oh.
I've been walking for hours.
Well, now, tell me, what is it?
A man, I think. Someone's been following me. I was followed here, I'm sure. I don't know why.
Really?
This is Los Angeles, California, isn't it?
Yeah.
I keep thinking... That is, I feel as though it should be Vancouver, British Columbia.
Oh?
I don't know how I got here or why I want to see you, but I've walked until I'm nearly exhausted, and I found that I'd written your name and address on this card here, so I decided to come and try to find out.
Now, tell me, do you know who you are?
No, I don't know who I am.
This man you're afraid of, do you know him?
No. But I believe he knew me. He reminded me of Vancouver, and that frightened me. I seem to remember I saw him a year ago. Maybe it was just the day before yesterday. See how crazy that sounds. I can't help it. I can't remember.
Yeah,
I can't.
Take it easy. Now, you better lie down on the divan. That's it. Come on. Atta girl. Now, look, I think we ought to call a hospital and see it. Stay where you are. It's company in the hall. Maybe for us. Now, just take it easy. Hey! Hey, you! Hold it! Hold it up there! Oh, great.
Who was it, Mr.
Marlowe? I couldn't see. Don't let it bother you now, honey. It's probably just one of my clumsy neighbors. He never watches where he's going. You know, the other night...
Stop, please. Whoever was out there was looking for me. I know he was. I know it.
Now, look, honey. Isn't there something you can tell me? Don't you remember anything?
No, I don't know. Here, look in my purse. There are things in it I don't understand. Maybe there'll be some help.
Key. Address on a piece of brown paper. 8400 North Virgil. Tompkins. Does that mean anything to you?
No.
Hmm. Snapshot album with one of the pictures missing.
Wait a minute. I remember now. It was stolen.
Good.
But I don't remember what the picture was. Oh, please, please try to find out who I am and why I'm being followed. Please try to find out why I'm afraid.
All right, baby. Now, you stay here till I get back, huh?
I won't bother anything. I'll wait right here.
I figured what she needed most was rest, and she was getting that fast, so I dropped the items from a purse into my pocket, snapped the lock on my apartment door, and left. My first stop was the phone downstairs in the lobby, where I found out that the Missing Persons Bureau had no one on file answering her description. My next stop was 8400 North Virgil. A half hour later, I found it. A crumbling stucco rooming house in a welder of knobby hills, huddled with other ramshackle houses that years ago had abandoned any hope of beauty. In the face of the leaky, bobbing oil wells that had invaded the neighborhood like a horde of huge, greasy grasshoppers. I walked past one of the creaking monsters in the front yard, then down a grimy hall with door marked manager, Jacob Philpotts, below which some neighborhood wag had penciled Stinks. It wasn't funny. Neither was Jake Philpotts.
Yeah. What is this? Speak up, Sparty. I'm very busy killing a soldier. What's on your mind beside your hat?
Okay, comic. I want to see Tompkins.
Oh, you want to see Tompkins?
That's what I said.
Well, you're too late, Sparty. He's gone. Blue. Flew the coop. Took the 500 berries and shoved off 2 hours ago.
Well, where?
Well, for his hometown, I guess. Vancouver. It's way up in Canada. Which is a long walk, Sparty, so you better get started. Bye.
Wait a minute, Jake.
Huh?
Where did Tompkins get the 500?
Where'd he get? Well, some classy guy gave it to him.
Classy guy? And why?
Well, to get out of town and stay out. So he does.
Uh-huh.
But first he pays back all his back rent and buys me a bottle besides. Wasn't that sweet of him?
That stuff over there?
Yeah.
He must have hated you. Who was the classy guy? Why do you want Tompkins out of town?
Why do you want Tompkins? Well, how do I know? What am I, an encyclopedia? Hey, look, Nosey, my whiskey's getting cold, so why don't you run along?
I want to know who the guy was, and I want it now.
Oh, so you're going to stop pushing, huh? You want to fight, huh? Okay, put him up. Come on.
Take it easy, Buster. Take it easy. You'll beat yourself to death. Now, let's negotiate.
Huh?
Prop up against the wall, and I'll talk to you. What about a price for another bottle of that stuff?
I wouldn't like to see another bottle.
That's what I said.
Oh, well, that's different. That's really nice of you, Sporty.
Not really, kid. I'm trying to poison you. Now, what was Tompkins' racket?
Oh, gardener, carpenter, handyman. Nothing much. What else?
Who was the classy guy that bought him off?
Let's see. His name right on the tip of my tongue a minute ago. Red-headed, flashy dresser. Had a sort of a... Oh! Palmer.
Yeah, boy.
Yeah, that's it. Palmerly.
Very good. Now, one more. Where can I find him?
Well, he says something about running the pearls. You get it?
Yeah, it's a dive on Highland. Thanks, Philpotts.
Oh, but don't thank me, Sparty. You bought it, remember? This brand comes to $7.50 with tax.
Don't kid an old kid or Jake. You can squeeze that junk out of sour potatoes.
Here's sour a potatoes!
And have a happy hangover. Outside, the smell of the oil well as I passed it was welcome by comparison to Jake, which made it tough to reconcile anything I'd seen at 8400 North Virgil with the girl asleep on the divan in my apartment. As I drove back to Hollywood, then down Highland Avenue, the night was still strangely quiet. Everything seemed to come in whispers. Even the hunch I had that the vanishing Mr. Tompkins had sold out dirt cheap to the boss of the pearls. Near 3rd Street, I spotted the place, parked a ways beyond it, and walked back. It was one of those dumps that dealt in bad bar whiskey. Second-rate bop and a lot of darkness. I shook off a brace of lost weekenders on my way through, made it up the stairs to the offices where a block of orange light on the floor and a two-tone conversation told me to stop, look, and listen.
Time, baby.
Alan, as they say in Missouri.
Have to show you, huh?
Uh-huh.
All right, Norm, I will. You're not easy to get over. I still love you and I've missed you. So when you dropped me for your stuffy broker friend, I did a little checking up, and I found out plenty.
About Cooper?
About Cooper Gerard.
I don't believe you.
Oh, but you should, honey. You see, Norma, it's not about him specifically, but about a woman. A woman who's all wrong, who spells trouble this deep, and I can prove it. I went to work on it tonight, and things are going to be different from now on.
Hey, buddy, buddy, I wanted you
get
to
get out of here.
Me
get
that.
Out of here. Go on.
Hey, now, wait a minute. All I want to know is
I said beat it, and I meant. Never mind, Buster. It doesn't matter anymore. My presence is now known.
Come on in, Junior. You can hear better inside.
I doubt it. I'll inhibit the performers. Thanks anyway.
Buddy, all I want to know
try
is...
Try the end of the hall, then left. It's usually there.
Okay, thanks. That's all I want to know. Hello.
Hello.
What do you want, mister? Make it snappy.
Okay. Why'd you pay Tompkins to leave town tonight?
Tompkins? Who are you?
Marlowe. Going to answer the question promptly?
Why, certainly. I didn't pay him to leave town. I paid him for some work. Carpenter work. Why?
What's the matter, Alan? Feel the whip handle slipping?
Not a bit, baby. Look, why don't you run along now? I'll call you later. Oh, here's your cigarette case.
My cigarette case?
Yeah. Take it with you. We'll get in touch later.
Okay, Alan. Good night, Marlowe.
Good night, Miss,
Picasso. Not that it'll do you any good.
That's a cute kid. Smart, too.
All right. Why are you interested in Tompkins?
There's a certain lady's interested.
And the lady's name?
None of your business.
Okay. Go on.
Miss Key. What door does it fit, Pomeroy?
How should I know? Have you got anything else?
Isn't that enough?
Not enough to worry about, Marlowe. So I suggest that you leave. And in case you have any doubts, this thing goes off awful easy.
I see your point.
Yeah. And I just as soon shoot as not, so start down those stairs and don't look back. I bus for a couple of the boys. They'll be at the bottom to help you out the front door. Oh, and Marlowe, take some advice. I don't like your type, so don't come back.
The boys escorted me politely as far as the sidewalk and gave me a send-off that plowed me into the gutter. It's my own fault for letting Pomeroy get the drop on me, but he was farther ahead of me than I figured. In fact, I was lucky all I got was the bounce. I limped back to my car, got in and started home, but something about the trio of Norma Lacasso, Pomeroy, and a broker named Gerard was off-center. And Gerard's connections were too strong to pass up. So I decided to let the pale woman asleep in my apartment go right on sleeping while I stopped at a phone booth. Found only one Cooper Gerard listed, and he at 8112 North Orange Drive. It was a lonely house up in the Hollywood Hills. I tried the bell and got no answer, but I knew he was there. I slipped the enigmatic key out of my pocket and listened to the music coming from inside. I stuck it in a lock. I turned, just as the footsteps inside, so I pulled it out fast and let the party on the other side of the door do the honors.
What is it?
You're Mr. Gerard?
Yes, I'm Cooper Gerard. What is it?
I'd like to come in and talk to you. My name's Marlowe. I'm a private detective. I've got a key that fits your front door, plus a little photo album full of a girl. Here.
Why, that's Margaret's album and her key. You found her. Where is she? What's happened to her?
She's safe.
Come in the other room.
Right. So her name's Margaret, huh? Margaret what?
Veazey. Margaret Veazey. But where is she? I've been frantic. I just called the police. She left the house this morning and didn't come back. It's late now, and in her condition, I'm afraid that
what
something...
is Margaret's condition, Mr. Gerard?
She was injured in an auto accident a year ago last July, up near Vancouver. It affected her mind. Oh, but please, where is she?
Just
I must
a minute.
Get...
There are some questions that I'd like answered first. Exactly what is Margaret Veazey to you?
Until July 9th, 1948, when that horrible accident happened, nothing. Merely a hitchhiker. My wife and I were motoring back from a vacation in Canada. We picked Miss Veazey up on the road. In the accident, Grace, my wife, was killed. Miss Veazey seriously injured. All I knew about her was that she was alone in the world, so there was no one to help her. Well, since I was driving the car, I assumed that responsibility. It was the least I could do. I stayed with her in Vancouver until she'd partially recovered, and then... brought her here. She's been with me ever since. Now, will you please take me to her?
But the story doesn't end there.
What do you mean?
Margaret Veazey's in trouble and she's scared. What do you know about a man named Tompkins, Mrs.?
Why, nothing. I don't know any Tompkins.
You do know a Norma Lacasso, don't you?
Norma? Of course, Miss Lacasso and I are quite good friends.
Mm-hmm. What about Alan Pomeroy?
Heard of him. Runs a nightclub, I believe.
That's right. Now tell me, can you tell me why a third picture is missing in the album?
What's that? Let me see. This is very strange. Margaret cherishes every picture in this album.
She thinks that one was stolen. Any idea what the picture was?
No. I can't imagine why it was stolen. All the pictures were simple, harmless snapshots. I can't remember the one that's missing, but... Marlowe, what does all this mean? What's it all about?
Well, as near as I can tell, there's some kind of nasty shakedown brewing. I don't know how or why, but Alan Parmalee's behind it, and Margaret Veazey's caught in the middle, so it involves you, too. Come on, let's go get her. She's asleep in my place.
You didn't leave her alone.
Yes, I did.
You shouldn't have done that. Couldn't you tell from her mental state that she isn't responsible? For 2 days she's been moody. She's been talking about suicide. She might... Marlowe, if anything's happened...
Come on, Sherrod, let's travel.
In just a moment, the second act of Philip Marlowe. But first, by the time you've listened to Johnny Dollar, Philip Marlowe, Gangbusters, and Escape in the CBS All-Star Saturday Night lineup, you may be for some sleuthing of your own. So try it with Sing It Again and the Phantom Voice. Don't always let the other guy or gal solve the mystery. Try it yourself with Sing It Again on most of these same CBS stations every Saturday night.
Tune in this fall. For the shows that you love best of all.
Listen carefully.
Here's the address.
It's CBS, CBS.
Now with our star, Gerald Moore, we return to the second act of Philip Marlowe and tonight's story, The Open Window.
It took 10 minutes to get from Gerard's house to my place. I knew because he reminded me of each one as it passed. But when we turned onto Franklin Way, we could see my apartment house, the word hurry stuck in his throat. An ambulance was pulling away from a tight knot of people standing on the concrete driveway beside the building. And 3 floors above them, glowing like a single ugly, unblinking eye, was the window of my own apartment, wide open. Even before I could stop the car, Gerard was out and running toward the crowd.
Who was in that ambulance?
A woman, mister. It was terrible.
She fell out of that open window up there.
Did you see it?
No, nobody saw it happen.
Yeah, it's bad, brother. They say she'd been laying here on the concrete for at least a half hour before anybody got to her.
It's been so quiet around here tonight, I'm surprised.
Wait,
that...
tell me, was she dead?
Just about. They don't give her a chance.
Come on, Gerard, let's go upstairs.
The police are up there now. They're trying to find out...
You say the woman came here to your apartment, Mr. Marlowe, and asked you for help. Is that right?
That's right, officer. She was frightened and exhausted. When I left, she was asleep on the divan there.
Was the door locked, Marlowe?
Yeah, it's got a nightlight, Gerard. I snapped it myself.
And you left her alone, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, take a look around, will you? See if you can find anything to indicate that an outsider came in while you were gone.
What makes you think there was an outsider here?
Because I don't think she fell.
Margaret was in mental turmoil, officer. She's been despondent. It's possible that she jumped.
Yeah? How many people have you heard of that jumped out of a window backwards, mister? I think she was pushed.
Pushed?
Yeah. Come here, both of you. I want to show you something.
He went over to the window and pointed to 5 scratches where fingernails had clawed the paint off the casing. The one that had to be made by her thumb was the lowest. It was true. She'd gone out backwards. As the officer explained that to Gerard, I stared down at the dwindling knot of people 3 stories below. Then up again at the 5 jagged scars ripped deep by a terrified woman's nails. Stared at them until they screamed at me, as a sick mind must have screamed when she fell.
Now, Mr. Marlowe, what about this cigarette stub with lipstick on it?
Cigarette stub? Hey, that's exactly what I'd like to know. Gerard, where does Norma live?
Why, the Hillcrest Apartments on Sunset, but surely...
Never mind what
she...
I think. You go to the hospital and find out about Margaret. I'm going to pay a call on Norma LaCasso right now. She's the type to be jealous enough to...
Marlowe, listen, you're making a mistake. That cigarette stub must be Margaret's, because Norma doesn't smoke.
What? Norma doesn't smoke. What about the cigarette case? Hey, Buster, you better check with Lieutenant Matthews at Homicide. I'll see you later.
Hey, come back here, Marlowe.
The Hillcrest Apartments fit Norma LaCasso to a T. There were sleek, soft tones of burnished wood, streamlined in glass, and just enough chrome around for glitter. When she answered a door in glossy green lounging pajamas edged in gold, smiled and tossed a head of hair that was almost burgundy back from her face, I knew what Alan Parmalee meant. Loving Norma LaCasso would be hard to get over.
Hello, Junior. Don't tell me you're joining the league, too. It's fast, you know.
Skip it, baby. I'm coming in. Do you mind?
No. Would it do any good?
Mm-mm.
Get comfortable. I'll mix you a drink or something.
Hey, Norma, you know Margaret Veazey, don't you?
That peculiar girl that stays at Gerard's place? Yeah, I met her once.
A little while ago, she dropped 3 floors from an open window to a slab of concrete.
Oh.
Lay there over 30 minutes before she was found.
Marlowe, that's one song. Don't look at me like that. I mean it. I like Margaret.
So do I. The more she didn't fall, she was pushed.
Oh.
Got a cigarette?
Sure. Here. Catch.
Thanks. Oh, just one cigarette toss like that? You man is a lousy. You're supposed to pass the case and let the guest help himself.
Marlowe, you're hurting.
I'm going to keep right on twisting until that solid gold cigarette case drops.
That's what I adore about men. They're full strength.
That's better.
Villa. I have to help yourself. The picture's there under the bottom layer of cigarettes. But why it's important is beyond me.
It's important to Palmley, baby. Had you smuggled out of his office so I couldn't find it. Margaret and Gerard at some little amusement park.
Mm-hmm. They're Vancouver, probably. Told me how I used to take her out while she was recovering from that accident. So what? The autograph sort of thing. No sense to me. Yeah, this one's hers.
Yeah, we had fun this day. This must be his, even the hottest day in Vancouver's history.
Now, that's it. All of it. Now, will you apologize for these welts on my arm?
I don't get it. Whole deal's screwed. The only way it would make any sense is if... Norma, where's your phone book?
Over there, under the phone.
Mm-hmm.
Why? What have you got, Marlowe?
Just an idea so far. Stick around. It's the U.S. government. War assets, Wise's Museum. Weather Bureau. Climatological records, yeah. Mutual 6442.
Records.
Hello, listen, can you tell me what the hottest day on record in Vancouver has been? I mean the date. Do you have that information?
British Columbia?
Yeah.
Yes, we've got it here, I'm pretty sure. Just a minute.
I'm not sure yet.
Yes, we've got it. Hello?
Yeah, I'm here. Go ahead.
The book says the hottest day up there was on July 3, 1948, when the temperature reached 92 degrees. Some heat record, huh? That's a nice place, Vancouver. I was up there one year.
Yeah, thanks, friend. The Weather Bureau has just lifted a cloud from a lady's mind. Hope you did it in time. So long.
You found out something big, didn't you?
The works. Well, aren't you going to pull a gun? They always do about here.
Not me. I've got concealed weapons.
You've also got dollar bills in your bloodstream instead of corpuscles. Mm. But you're smart, baby. So take a tip. Stick close to home. Don't even use the phone. You're a real nice, shiny item. I'd like to keep you that way.
Hey, I'm going to take your word, Junior. But what does it mean?
Trouble. Just as soon as I can stir it up. Good night. From Norma's and the time that had gone by, I figured my best bet was Gerard's place, but I was wrong. It was deserted, so I took the next best, which was Alan Palmley's The Pearls. It was well after 2 o'clock when I got there, and the club was closed, but the lights were on, the offices upstairs. I parked, slipped around to the back and up a flight of iron stairs to a metal door at the top. I pressed my weight against it and very gently turned the knob. And tugged softly, and it swung open without a sound. Voices in the same square of orange light on the floor said that Palmley's office was open again. So I eased my gun into my hand and moved so I could see him. A pair of jackals coming to terms over
since
the carcass of a
Since I know your little
form.
Secret, Mr. Gerard, the proposition I'm offering is perfectly fair.
What is it?
First, that you stop seeing Norma Lacasso. And I mean stop.
Go on.
Second, that you deliver $5,000 here to me by the end of the week. You must have got a lot of insurance on your wife, Gerard. Double indemnity, too. Am I asking too much?
Blackmail leaves me no alternative.
You're so right.
How did you find out that she's not Margaret Vesey?
Ha ha! A beautiful break. When you started seeing Miss La Casa, I began checking up on you, and 2 days ago, that checking up led me to the strange woman you called Margaret Vesey and a character named Tompkins. Ever hear of him?
No.
An itinerant gardener was looking for work at your place. Also, Gerard, an itinerant gardener who knew your Margaret Vesey, who knew her as someone named Grace. And Grace Gerard, lest we forget, was your wife. When he called her Grace, it scared her. She couldn't open, but I could.
So I see. Where is this Tompkins now, Palmley?
Oh, don't worry about him. I sent him away. He'll keep his mouth shut. He used to be a gardener on the wealthy side of Vancouver where your wife lived. Small world, eh?
Very small world.
Now, wait a minute, Gerard.
I'm going to kill you, Palmley. I knew something like this would happen someday. My wife was getting her memory back. She was beginning to remember things, to realize that she wasn't really Margaret Vesey at all, that Margaret Vesey had died in the accident. The night, I pushed her out of an open window. Doctors practically assure me that she'll be dead by morning. She won't be missed, and neither will you, I'm sure.
Next one's for your belly, Gerard, if you move 1 inch. You, Palmley, come around here. Wait me at desk. Come on.
This time I'm glad to see you, Marlowe. You're the lesser of two evils.
That's great. Well, it was a sweet story, fellas. Between you, you left out only one thing, the picture. You got it from the little album because you needed some tangible proof, didn't you, Palmley? And it cinched the deal because the accident happened on the 9th of July. But Gerard here had his picture taken with a supposed hitchhiker on Vancouver's hottest day, which was July 3rd. 6 days before he claims to have met the girl.
Picture?
How'd you manage the master stroke, Gerard? The switch in identities in the first place. Come on, talk! What are you...
It was a mistake. Both Miss Beasley and my wife were in the car at the time of the accident.
car burned. Then, somehow or other, later at the hospital, Margaret Veazey, who died, was identified as my wife, Grace.
And since her memory was gone, you made the switch complete and called your wife Margaret Veazey and left it like that. You know, Gerard, I hope you make a break for it. Just once, before we get to headquarters. Let's go. You too, Parmalee, move.
All right, but you'll have a hard time sticking me, Snoop. I haven't done anything.
Oh, yes, you have. Attempted extortion, as of right now, you just incited a rat!
Dr. Gray to receiving ward, please. Dr. Gray.
You didn't hear, Mr. Marlowe.
Sure it's all right if I see you now, Doctor?
After what you've just told me, I think it's a good idea. Her condition has changed somewhat. She's responded better than I expected, but she can use some fighting spirits and spunk. Maybe you can give her that. We can't.
I hope so.
And don't stay too long, that's all.
Hello, Grace. I'm Philip Marlowe, remember me?
Yes, I think I do, Mr. Marlowe. Glad to see you.
Oh, good. I just stopped by to tell you that I have all the answers to those troublesome questions in your mind. You don't have to be afraid of them anymore. You've got nothing to worry about now except getting well.
Oh, easy, Becca. I can't remember where I've been.
Now, you've been away, Grace, for a long time. But now you'll be going home soon to your friends. Believe that. I'll run along now and come back tomorrow when you're feeling better. We'll have a long talk, then.
Wait. Who is Margaret Veazey?
Girl you knew once, briefly. And what I'll never forget. Went to sleep one night on my divan.
I don't remember.
You will. Don't think about it now. Just think about home in Vancouver. You'll be there soon, I promise.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. It's lovely in Vancouver.
Yeah. That's what the weatherman says. Good night, my dear. When I finally got home, the air in my apartment was thick, full of stagnant fear and stale tobacco smoke. So I went over the window to open it up. There I stopped because I remembered standing at that same window earlier that evening, standing there thinking how happy I was that the world was out there, and how happy I was to be inside, looking out. Then I saw again the five deep scratches on the casing. Inside looking out, huh? There was a guy once, a long time ago, who said something like, "No man is an island entire of itself." Yeah, about 300 years ago he said that. Any man's death diminishes me because I'm involved in mankind. Sure.
The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, bringing you Raymond Chandler's most famous character, star Gerald Moore, and are produced and directed by Norman MacDonald. Script is by Robert Mitchell and Gene Levitt. Featured in the cast were Betty Lou Gerson, Ed Begley, Lillian Bioff, Paul Dubois, Jay Novello, and Harry Bartell. The special music is composed and conducted by Richard Oran. Be sure and be with us next week when Philip Marlowe says...
This time it was a wrestler on the skids, a quick change artist in an alley, and a girl with an eye for angles. All met destruction because 100,000 easy bucks... caught him in a stranglehold, which none of them wanted to break.
The next time you're in the woods, make sure that cigarette butt, that match, or that campfire is completely out. Only you can prevent forest fires. This is Paul Masterson speaking. Now, stay tuned for Gangbusters, which follows immediately over most of these same stations. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
now, girl. I've got to know what goes. Last night, someone ran me down. Later on, they killed an old man who tried to tell me something. My nerves are like radar, and they're sending out all kinds of danger signals. I'm on somebody's list. Whose list, doll girl? Come on, give.
The New Adventures of Michael Shane, Private Detective. Michael Shane, reckless, red-headed Irishman back in his old haunts in New Orleans. Ready as always to risk his neck for law, order, and an occasional dollar. Listen now as we bring you The New Adventures of Michael Shane.
Hello.
Michael Shane, Private Detective.
Speaking.
Mr. Shane, I have a job for you, but I can't pay you very much.
Keep talking, I'm listening.
My name is Marina Lau. I want you to come over to 1612 Wentworth Street. I meet you on the porch.
On the porch?
Yes, this is why I call you. My father has locked all the doors and windows. He's in the house, sitting in the dark, waiting.
Waiting for what?
For death, Mr. Shane.
Now we return to New Orleans and a new adventure with Michael Shane.
So I was on my way across New Orleans to see Marina LaRue, whose papa was waiting for death. 1612 Wentworth Street was a couple of minutes by cab in ordinary times, but these were not ordinary times, so it was taking me a half hour to walk it. Yeah, this had been a bad month for little Mike. Police headquarters had suspended my license for 60 days for being a stunk. But even stunks have stomachs and creditors. And that last buck in my wallet was so lonely it was getting psychoneurotic. So, license or no license, I wasn't letting Marina LaRue get away. And just like she said, she was waiting on the porch and she was some baby doll. Creole from way back and round and ripe like a cantaloupe busting its seams. Only I'd been living on shredded wheat and canned milk for so long, all Marina LaRue meant to me then was ham and eggs and pork chops and maybe pie a la mode.
Mr. Shane.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so glad you're here. I'm half out of my mind. I don't want to call the police if nothing is really wrong.
Hey, slow down, slow down. Your father's inside the house?
Yes. He has been in there for the last 8 days, just sitting in his room in the dark. Like I said, waiting for death.
What's the matter? Is he sick?
No. He's as healthy as you or I. That's why I don't understand. Tonight, he won't even let me in the house. He has locked all the doors and the windows. I don't know what to think.
Well, I think we ought to tap a brick against one of those windows and have a talk with Papa.
Yes.
Yeah, but first I ought to tell you that I break windows and talk to Papas who wait for death for something more than the sheer joy of it. For something like 20 bucks a day. You understand that, of course.
I told you I pay you.
Okay. I always like to begin business on a friendly basis. Now, where's that brick? I broke the window, reached in and unlocked it, and then slid over the sill. The house was as black as a mug of G.I. coffee. I found a light switch and clicked it back and forth, but nothing happened. Then I let the girl in through the front door. Come on in. What happened to the lights?
I don't know. And where is Papa?
Yeah.
Papa! Papa!
I started lighting matches and we wandered through the house.
Papa, where are you?
A single flare of light cast crazy shadows against the walls and the ceiling.
Papa!
You got the screwy feeling that the house itself was alive and watching you. Except for our footsteps, there wasn't a sound.
Papa, where are you?
My error. Yeah, there was a sound, all right, coming from the next room down the hall. I felt a nerve deep down inside me start jangling like a burglar alarm.
Papa!
I knew that sound like I know my heartbeat. We were at the door of the room. I struck another match and the girl saw.
Papa! No. No, Papa! No, Papa!
He was hanging like a pig in a butcher shop, tied to the chandelier. His head lolled on his shoulder and his eyes stared up at nothing at all. Then suddenly the girl's sobbing ended as though somebody had clamped a hand over her mouth. When she spoke, she sounded like a stranger.
Strike another match. A lick close to here.
Wasn't one look enough?
Strike a match.
Okay.
He's forehead.
Yeah. Funny, Mark. Looks like a brand or something. A coiled snake.
I should have known. I should have known that's why he was so frightened. That is who he was waiting for. Anthony Gael.
Hey, kid. Snap out of it. Hey, what's wrong with you? What are you talking about? Who's Carell?
I didn't say. Call the police. Tell them my father committed suicide. And then go away.
I did what the lady said. I called the cops, collected my 20 bucks, and beat it. Because if the police found me working without a license, they might send me to bed without supper. With 20 bucks, I was once again a man of distinction. So I took a cab downtown. On the way, I debated whether to sample Antoine's elegant crawfish or Galatoire's savory bouillabaisse. And I settled for Charlie's hash and beer. Charlie was an ancient moth-eaten character who kept a basement bar on Beale Street just so he'd have somebody to talk to. And there weren't many customers tonight, and he stayed close to me, polishing the mahogany and looking annoyed.
New Orleans, how quaint.
Huh?
Yeah, that's what they said, how quaint.
What are you talking about, Charlie?
Tourists, I'm talking about, six of them. Came down a while back from Peoria, they said. Just looking, they said, how quaint.
All right,
quaint.
Pour me they... another one, Charlie.
Yeah, okay, Mike. Quaint they think this is. I should have told them how my place used to be. But the cockfights we had right there in the center of the floor by candlelight. And the 12 ladies from Natchez doing the can-can. Peoria.
Charlie.
Huh?
Did you ever hear of anyone named Anthony Carell? Charlie, I'm talking to you.
I heard you, Shane.
Well?
You better stick to looking through hotel transoms and forget Anthony Carell.
Why?
Because it's something out of the past. Something that hasn't got any place in this world.
What are you talking about?
You see, according to the story, there's something special about Anthony Carell.
Special?
Yeah. He ain't like you and me, Shane. You see, Anthony Carell ain't never gonna die.
That tickled me. Oh. I finished my drink, waved goodbye to old Charlie, yelled something about getting Carell's formula and putting Perona out of business, and then I was on my way. The air was better outside, and I decided to walk. It was a nice, quiet street. Great place to start a cemetery. As it turned out, I was just the kid to start one. I didn't hear the car behind me. All I saw was the cab on the next corner. The cab driver was leaning against the open door waiting for me. I stepped off the curb and a couple of
heads...
And I was rolling on cobblestones, watching a red taillight disappear in the distance. Next thing, the cab driver was bending over me.
You okay, Pally?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. Hey, take me home, will you?
That sure was close.
No, I just got careless crossing the street.
Careless? I was watching, Pally. That car followed you for maybe two blocks, waiting to get a chance at you.
Huh?
Yeah. Somebody in this town don't like you very much, Pally.
The cabbie drove Pally home. Between my evening of hilarity and my nosedive in the gutter, I felt kind of rocky. As soon as I got in the room, I flopped down in bed and bid the world good night. But the world wasn't finished with me. Yeah. Oh.
Charlie.
Oh, yeah, Charlie.
Listen to me, boy. Something funny's going on.
Yeah, funny.
They're trying to scare me. But old Charlie's been around too long to scare.
Good for old Charlie.
You come on over now. I'll tell you what they're up to, boy.
Yeah, sure.
Come on over right away.
Okay.
You know where I bunk? In the room behind the bar. Just knock on the front door. I'll let you in.
Yeah.
Get here quick as you can.
Sure, Charlie. The last thing I saw before I fell asleep again was the luminous green dial on my bedside clock. 3:47. It said 10:20 when I saw it again. The room was lousy with sunshine. I was brushing my teeth and trying to avoid my reflection in the mirror when I remembered Charlie calling me. I found the phone number of his joint in the book and I called him. Only it wasn't Charlie who answered.
Yeah?
I want to speak to Charlie.
Who is it?
Just let me talk to Charlie.
Sorry, mister. Charlie isn't here.
Where is he?
They took him to the morgue an hour ago. He's dead.
Now, back to to New Orleans to the new adventures of Michael Caine.
From the beginning, it hadn't made much sense. Marina LaRue calling me to break into her father's house. Him hanging from the chandelier with a snake brand on his forehead. And now old Charlie dead. Well, I went down to the morgue. The attendant took me to the basement where Charlie was on a table. Lieutenant Burns of headquarters was just taking a peek.
Nasty, a redhead.
Yeah, neck's a bum sheep for butchering. What's that on his forehead? Looks like a brand. Like a coiled snake.
I probably banged his head. It's nothing.
Well, you want to bet, Lieutenant?
Say, look, Shane, what are you doing around here? You're not forgetting that your license is suspended.
A guy can get in here without a license. Look at Charlie. All he had was a license to sell bad booze.
You're not doing any work for anybody?
No, just keeping in training.
Come on, be a good boy, Redhead. You've only got a couple of weeks to go. Then it'll be legal for you to start bothering us.
Burns, tell me about Anthony Correll.
Who?
Sometimes called the deathless one.
Oh, my back. Don't tell me that's going around again.
Well, what about him?
That's what I love about this town. No matter how modern it may look on the outside, underneath it's still a jungle. Still dancing to voodoo drums.
Voodoo?
Yeah, every so often some scared sucker comes in and whispers in our ears that Anthony Correll is still alive and terrifying the countryside. When we ask him for one teeny little bit of proof, the little sucker vanishes in a puff of smoke. Anthony Correll. Oh, Redhead, you can do better than that.
Yeah, when I got outside on Jackson Street, it did seem kind of silly. But what was so silly about that car trying to run me down last night? What was so silly about Charlie under a white sheet in the basement of that morgue? Oh, I had enough questions in my head to start a quiz show, but not enough answers to win a yo-yo. I knew a good place to ask questions, though. And I had to start asking questions fast. Something was happening, something big, and it was happening to me. I took a cab out to the brownstone house on Wentworth Street where all this began. Come on, you're going to have to open up sometime, baby doll.
Please, go away, Mr. Shane.
In a little while, Marina, honey.
Please, I'm in mourning. Have some respect.
Sure, I'll take off my hat. Inside!
What do you want?
Why are you so scared?
I'm not scared.
Tell that to the little nerve in your cheek. It's twitching overtime. Look, I want to know about Anthony Correll.
No, please, no.
Yes, please, yes.
Mr. Shane, I was rather glad when I saw you coming up the stairs.
Yeah?
Yes, really I was. I have had trouble forgetting you, Michael.
Dog girl, turn off the warm water. I'd love to, but I can't. How about Anthony Correll?
Why do you bother with something that does not concern you?
That's just it, dog girl. It concerns me clear up to here. Last night, somebody tried to run me down. Later on, they killed an old man who wanted to tell me something. Look, I've been in this business a long time. My nerves are like radar, and they're sending out all kinds of danger signals. I'm on somebody's list. Oh, I'm not one of those storybook detectives, dog girl. I've got to know what I'm fighting.
I cannot help you.
You've got to.
No.
Okay. Mind if I use the phone?
Who are you calling?
The Daily Bulletin. I got a pal working in the city room. I'm going to tell him Marina LaRue of 1612 Wentworth Street says Anthony Correll was responsible for the death of her father.
Grant.
Bulletin, let me speak to Fraser in the city room.
You give me the phone?
No.
Oh, you can't do this. They kill me.
I'm fighting for my own neck, honey. Hello. Hello, Fraser. This is Mike Shane.
Please.
Hey, I think I got a story
I
for you.
I tell you what, tell you.
Goodbye, Fraser. Okay, doctor. Give.
Yes. I tell you. And you go out, try to do something about it, the way men have done for 100 years. And if they find you at all, they find branded into your flesh the coiled snake. The mask of Anthony Correll. Just as they have found it on all the others.
Who is this guy, Anthony Correll?
You have heard of Madame Lorette?
Madame Lorette? Sure. Wasn't she supposed to be some kind of big shot in the voodoo racket around New Orleans?
She was the voodoo queen more than a century ago.
Yeah?
In the 1820s, she married another voodoo worshiper. A man already old. Come to New Orleans from Haiti. He was the greatest of them all. His name was Anthony Correll.
And this guy who's causing all the trouble today, he's his descendant, huh?
Descendant, you fool, don't you understand? It is the same man.
But that couldn't be.
Why do you think we are all in such terror of him? He cannot die. Do you know what that means?
Hey, take it.
He cannot die. His food has been poisoned. Cows he was riding in have been shot at. Once the house he was staying in was dynamited. Men stood at every door with guns. But in less than a week, the plotters were dying one by one. And on their foreheads, the snake brand of Anthony Carelli.
That's crazy.
That is the story, Mr. Shane. Believe it. Don't believe it as you wish.
What does this big shot look like?
No living man has ever seen his face. There are no pictures.
And who takes care of him?
The Carroll clan, one generation after another. Today, there are only two left. Juan, Philippe. They do Anthony Carroll's work. Collect his tribute.
Juan and Philippe. Where do they live?
I don't know. I don't know. I've told you everything I know. What else do you want, Mr. Shade? What else do you want?
What else do I want? A little while ago, you said you had trouble forgetting me.
Well?
Come here, doll girl. I don't want you to forget it. After I left Marina, I went to the library and spent half a day looking up the old history books of New Orleans. Madame Lorette and Anthony Carell were in every one, and every book agreed that Madame had died in 1845. There was no mention of Anthony Carell ever having died at all. I called an old guy I knew over at the Bureau of Records. I told him I was looking for the death certificate of one Anthony Carell. He laughed over the phone, asked me if I was falling for that old story. But 3 hours later, he called me back. Yeah?
Shane, this is the Bureau of Records.
Well?
You were right. There is no death certificate for Anthony Carell.
I had a couple of drinks after that. Then I started walking the streets. My head throbbed. Felt like a guy trapped in a nightmare, trying with all his might to wake up out of it. Around midnight, I found a small park near Jackson Square and sat down on a bench trying to think of an answer.
May I sit down, Mr. Shane?
Huh? Oh, yeah, sure. Hey, how come you know my name?
Oh, you are a very famous man, Mr. Shane. Known particularly for your tenacity. Cigarette?
Thanks. What do you want?
Mr. Shane, it's very unfortunate that you saw fit to interest yourself in Anthony Carell.
Oh? Why?
Because now I must kill you.
I felt the bullet smash against me. But at first there was so little pain, that same crazy feeling of maybe it's a dream came back. I lunged for the guy, trying to get hold of his gun hand. Like wrestling with an octopus. He was soft and wet-skinned and a neat little fellow. He even wore cologne. It was slipping out of my reach. I jumped up and started running. I said the first prayer that came to my mind. Catholic, Hebrew, Episcopalian, who cared? I saw a row of shrubbery and dived in. And that bullet had been real, all right. My side was beginning to ache like a whole mouthful of sore teeth. My friend with the gun came so close to the brush I could smell his sweet, stinking cologne. I remembered a couple of other prayers. Something must have worked. A siren started sobbing the blues far off, and the guy beat it. He climbed into a little black coupe parked at the curb. Pulled away, but he was playing it very safe. There was a long stoplight at the corner, and he waited for every second of it. A nice, law-abiding, perfumed young man. There was a parking lot half a block down the street. I ran for it. As I ducked in, I saw the light on the corner change. The black coupe down Canal Street. I hopped into the first car and turned on the ignition. A sleepy-eyed attendant came out of a little shed, and I kicked the starter.
Got your ticket, mister? Hey, come back! Come back!
I wasn't so law-abiding. I went down side streets like somebody lit a fuse. Yeah, just like in the movies, except my side hurt, my shirt felt sticky and warm, and I was sick to my stomach. When I was sure no cops were following me, I cut back to Canal Street, and pretty soon I saw the black coupe again, still obeying all the laws. Now we're on the outskirts of town, along the wharves that reached out into the Gulf. The black coupe picked up speed. I picked up speed. Oh, it was a long ride through little country roads that stretched through the bayous. Once I managed to slip my hand into my shirt. Made the happy discovery my wound felt a lot worse than it really was. Yeah, and I had another good break. In the dashboard compartment, I found a pint of bourbon that had hardly been touched. Oh, I touched it good. It was almost as fine as a blood transfusion. And then before I knew it, the black coupe had turned into a driveway. I went on a few hundred yards, pulled up onto some trees, and turned the lights off. It was a battered, weather-beaten farmhouse, standing all by itself in the middle of nothing. The windows were boarded up. Everything about it said nobody home except the black coupe. I snuck around the back. Screen door was open. I walked across the porch and almost knocked over a row of milk bottles. I tried the back door. Door was open. Oh, no, I wasn't having any. You didn't have to be a quiz kid to know what this setup was. I started back across the porch. I reached the screen door, and then I stopped. The only sound in all the world was a mosquito buzzing like mad in the darkness. Hey, Shane, where are you going? Oh, I realized I'd said that out loud. Kind of giggled to myself. I rubbed my head. It was hot. A bullet hole. Maybe I was already getting delirious. Yeah. Now, but where was I going? Back to little New Orleans? For what? The cops wouldn't listen to me. To them, I was just a big-nosed redhead out for a quick buck. And my sweet-smelling friend had slipped up twice now. If I went back to town, he'd come after me again, and he was just about due for the jackpot. No. Well, there was no place to go except inside the house. I picked up one of the milk bottles. Me and my homogenized blackjack. I went back to the door. Pushed it open. Went into the kitchen. Everything dark. I could just make out some dishes on the sink. The place smelled of bad, greasy cooking. Then I found another door. Now I was in a short hallway that led to a flight of stairs. Not a sound at all. Oh, I'd even been glad to hear that mosquito. Stairs. Started up a step at a time. Slow. Easy. Slow. Easy. And when I was close to the top, there was something about the darkness that looked wrong. Real close to me, I smelled sweet cologne. I spun around and started down the stairs fast, but it was all wasted. At the foot of the stairs, a cigarette glowed in the dark. I was boxed in real nice. The guy downstairs spoke first.
So this is Mr. Shane Juan.
Yes, this is him, Philippe.
Juan and Philippe. The brothers Carell. And where is old man Anthony?
You have come for Anthony. Well, he is in the last room at the end of the hall, but I don't think you will reach him. I think you are going to die on those stairs. Keep coming up the steps, Mr. Shane.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. How's this?
Oh, look out!
I lunged at him. There was a swirl of cologne. I brought the milk bottle down hard. Juan crumpled on the floor, nice as you please. Behind me, I heard Philippe coming up after me. I raced down the hall. I tried the first door. Locked. The second door. Oh, locked. The third door was unlocked. I opened it and slammed it shut behind me. I snapped the lock. Oh, friend Philippe was at the door breaking through. I did the first thing that came to my mind. I picked up a chair and smashed it through the window. And then I ducked into a corner as the door flung open. Philippe came into the room holding his gun. He headed straight for the broken window. He stood looking out of it into the darkness for a long time.
Won't get away, Mr. Shane.
His back was to me. I started for him. My side was throbbing again. My throat was so dry you could have struck matches on it. Something must have warned Philippe. He started turning around. I brought the milk bottle down hard. He staggered, fell to his knees. Got up and started clawing at my legs. I went into a deep purple fog. When I came out of it, Philippe was very quiet. The milk bottle was broken into a thousand pieces. I sat down on a chair. I felt about as peppy as a Floridora girl. And then I remembered. Anthony Carell, the man who couldn't die, was down the hall. I went over to Philippe and dug around until I found his gun. He groaned a little bit, but that's all. I went back out into the hall. The last room at the end of the hall. I started toward it. And in front of the door, I saw Juan.
I will not let you in this room.
He wasn't able to stand up. He was on his knees in front of the door, and his mouth hung open as though he didn't have the strength to close it.
For 5 generations, he has been our strength. With him, we've been able to rule everyone. I will not let you destroy him.
And then I saw the gun in his hand. I saw him try to raise it. I shot 3 times. He collapsed in a heap. Even while dying, he wasn't going to let me into that room. As I reached for the knob, with his last strength, Juan flung his arm up and wildly tried to block me. What was there in that room that a guy would die like this just to protect? I reached for the knob and raised my gun. I entered the room, slowly, looked around. Then I realized why Juan and Philippe had tried so hard to keep me out of here. Then I realized why Anthony Carell would not die, why he could not be killed. There was no Anthony Carell. The room was empty. Yeah.
Yeah, that was the story of Anthony Carell. He'd lived and died in his own time just as any man. But the Carell clan, knowing the power of fear, had made it appear that the old man was still alive and kicking. Oh, I wonder how many people go through life being afraid of empty rooms. Well, as soon as I got back to town that night, I went to the emergency hospital and had myself pasted together. Then I called on Marina LaRue. I told her all about Anthony Carell. When I finished, she didn't say a word. Just came over and looked at me a long time, and she kissed me. After a while, I began to realize that trip to the hospital was wasted. Marina was so much better than penicillin.
More from Case Closed at RelicRadio.com, more from Marlowe, more from Shane, and all of the other Relic Radio podcasts. Lots to listen to there, all for free. Thanks to your support. If you'd like to help out, visit donate.relicradio.com or click on one of those links on the website. Thank you again to those who have. Talk to you again next Wednesday with another hour of Case Closed.